episode 316 of the show today. Brought to you by DRF Sports. DRF Sports. Excuse me, get the sponsor right. Here we go. NIL. And a little bit of transfer portal. Things are going crazy. Kids are making hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars before they ever step on campus. The tampering, everything else that's going on. There's a lot to talk about. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Washoe Walk-Ons fans. Episode 316 of one of the world's dumbest but most fun podcasts. And I'm here to talk some shit with my friends. Clover, what do you got?
Dude, I'm here in that same fashion. Texting Gimbel right now. He's got a bachelor party going down next weekend. And it'll be pretty lit. I can't hear you. It says you're unmuted, but I can't hear you.
Scottsdale or Nashville?
Oh, it will not be in either of those places. It will be in Minneapolis. Decent, better than Des Moines, probably. And I'm just happy to be here tonight on a Wednesday evening at 5:30 with my two crippled friends who evidently, Drake, your shoulder is, you're not going to be on the tour anytime soon.
No, but also Kevin's not crippled enough to not beat the Drake Relays winner, like we said.
No, he did. That's true. Yeah, I get what you're saying. He did. He slid in. Let's talk about that. Kevin actually went out and ran the 400, 2 out of 3 on this show. And I'll give it to Drake, even though I think he's going to dodge it regardless. He sprained the MCL a little bit.
I did make a bet also.
You did, but
anybody willing to take my bet, I'll make it.
Yeah. Kev, tell us about your 400.
It hurt real bad. That's the first one I'd run in, oh man, at least 2 years. Remember I was doing that one like decathlon event? I
think that was the last time I ran one. Yeah, that was part of it.
Yeah, but felt a lot faster, like just like running, than I thought I'd be. But it really fucking hurt. Like those last 50 meters were
bad.
There was fumes, nothing in the tank. The engine's sputtering.
Not a lot of pal mechanics going on in the last.
No. The form broke down, but we managed to get across the line in 55 and change. So we would have beat the women's champ. So
just barely we got in there. And actually the way it went down at Drake was the first second, both it was a photo finish. It was not like that racehorse that came and ran 80-1 and won that sumbitch. It was down to the wire. And you would have, God, what I would have paid to put you next to those two for the full 400 and just to see you guys run.
It would have been fun, man. I miss racing. Racing is like just a good sport. Cause I feel like, you know, it's competitive, but at the same time, it's not like physically against each other. Like, hands on each other competitive.
Yeah.
So it's not like friendly in that way. Like,
like
back in high school, it was like friendly competition. Mm-hmm. But what I was thinking of was like my 17-year-old self would have beat me by 6 whole seconds.
Yeah. You would have been eating a snack by the time your current self came across.
Yeah. And my current self had to go lay down on the grass for about 5-10 minutes. So one time I ran the 300 meter hurdles.
Oh no.
Which is the race before the 400, then ran the 400.
Oh, you
had back. Like you had to run this in between.
You had to have been trash in the 400.
I was. I mean, no, I actually did. No, it goes 400 then 300, I think actually.
Okay.
I forget which the order is, but yeah, it goes back to back and I was fine. But at 27, Kevin needs to take a little break in the grass and recollect his thoughts and oxygen.
That's an energy system you're dipping into with a back-to-back track race. You're dipping into that CrossFit energy system, because that's what we call anaerobic volume or anaerobic endurance, right? How long can you go in the middle energy system where it's just like, ooh, that hurts? And how quickly can you recover? Doesn't surprise me that 17-year-old Kev, who was training, recovered a little bit better than 27-year-old Kev.
Yeah, but yeah. They're good training, man. I might start doing them more often, but current Kevin today
can swim February, a damn mile.
Yeah, he can. He can. Well, actually, no, he can't. 2 days ago, he could have. Today, he can't.
Okay.
Your boy has an appendage that is less than stellar right now.
What'd you do?
Something popped.
You tried to fight a Kimura, didn't you? Somebody put you in a Kimura and you did an arm bar. Yep.
Yeah, I tried to fight an arm bar. So he's got
hold of my arm. Typical white belt, dude. The absolute typical white belt meathead doesn't know the proper defense mechanics and holds on to it. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm doing. I'm like, you know, trying to muscle the shit out of this thing so he can't rip my arm and extend it and tap me. And like just like you said, I'm trying to muscle fuck the thing and just be stronger than the guy. And all that tension's going right through my shoulder and all of a sudden just pops and bad. So I can't lift my arm above my head right now. I'm getting an MRI on Friday and we'll see how bad it is. Like, I texted one of my surgeon buddies right away. He's like, hey, what you got going on today? I might need to come see you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Kevy.
Okay. Yeah, so
we're not going to be doing too much jujitsu in the next few months, at least.
Or shoulder pressing or anything.
Or anything, man. You can't run, you can't sprint, you can't swim. It's going to be...
And remind the people, you tore your labrum in your shoulder, correct?
Yeah, same shoulder.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You think it's torn, or do you dislocated it and it came back in, or what?
No, it wasn't dislocated. It's something in the pec. It's either the muscle or the tendon.
Drake is hurting right now.
Yeah, so I think I still have some tendon left. I can feel it. My surgeon buddy thinks it's probably a partial tear. So it's, you know, we'll see what the MRI says, but I'm hoping it's something I can rehab through. I'm going to say it's a 50-50 chance I need surgery.
Oh no.
And then once you rehab and decide you want to come back to jiu-jitsu, your old pal Drake is going to teach you a little something called the hitchhiker, and you'll never have this problem again.
So here's the thing, man, is, you know, you got me interested in jiu-jitsu, right? And
yeah,
I went into it as like saying to myself in my head, you know, I'm just going to go in, check it out, have fun, get better, learn some shit. I'm never going to compete, right?
And then he got,
so there's no point in me getting hurt over this shit. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, you know, anytime I feel like I'm about to get beat, I'll just tap early. That's my mindset going into it. 4 months later, I'm a dumbass thinking I know what I'm doing. I'm strong. I'm starting to get a hang of this a little bit. Let me see if I can't fight this one. And my dumbass, stubborn, competitive self got me into a little trouble. So,
hey, a little competitive spirit will get you in trouble sometimes.
It does.
I'll tell you what.
I hate to laugh at your pain, pal, but this is the prototypical white belt story right here. The didn't tap fast enough story.
I mean, I wasn't in the position to tap, right? It's because he didn't have my
verbal yet. Verbal. They always teach us to tap verbally, because when you learn leg locks, you're never going to want to release your defense to tap, because as soon as you release your defense.
No. What I'm saying is, like, he didn't have my arm extended yet. So, like,
right. But if you were feeling all that pressure, like, it's still a submission. He could have had a bicep slicer.
So it's not the jiu-jitsu move that that made it pop. It's just like the same if I was going down with a heavy bench press, you know. It was like the actual force through it.
But you couldn't feel it coming on?
No, no.
It just happened.
Just went.
Oh, that. So, oh, well, see, I thought you were feeling it.
No. So it wasn't like he had me in the position and I'm like fighting it there. He's like, he's getting me there. My arm's like slowly coming out and I'm still fighting it, trying not to get my arm extended into the arm bar. And at that point, everything in my shoulder just went.
Mm.
So it's like basically like you're doing a heavy ass bench press and you're lowering it. You're trying to go back up and then.
Drake, would you know what that feels like?
Not exactly, because I did press mine up, but kind of.
Yeah, and it wasn't that heavy either.
So I've pulled a pec before, and this is not that.
So okay.
I was talking to Josie yesterday because he tore his pec, obviously, and
he sure did.
Asking him what he felt.
Josie's pec tear was worse than mine too. Yeah, his was all the way tendon. Mine was in the tendon muscle junction.
So what Josie described and what I'm feeling are pretty similar. So,
yikes.
Yeah. I got a little black and blue going on in my bicep area right now. So,
wow. Lucky for Josie, they build them strong up there in Decorah. You know, there's something in the water and he's in the league. And so he's probably going to be all right. Kevin, unsure. We'll find out. Right. All to say that neither of you are going to find yourself on the PGA Tour anytime soon. Right before this podcast, Drake was golfing. The plan was that we were going to have this thing recorded later on tonight because Drake was going to golf 18. Guy couldn't make it through. So we're here.
Let's be really honest. I can't make it through 9. Okay. I started on two because I had to pick up TJ from the parking lot. And then we met the guys on two because we had already teed off. So by the time we got to 5, my swing had pretty well fallen apart. I was ready to go home and ice my shoulder.
Wow. It's not good, mate.
Yeah. Pretty confident I have a rotator cuff tear.
So you're both torn up in the shoulder.
To go along with a potential labrum tear too, because the shoulder, when I move it, rotate it inside the socket, it grinds horrendously.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I will hold it down for this podcast with the shoulder health and mobility. Mine is good. Some would say great. Shoulders are healthy. In fact, I did overhead lunges today. So hold it down for y'all. One quick funny story about running in the 400 and Kevin feeling like shit. Kevin, you tasted blood, like had that metal copper penny taste in your mouth after your bout of exercise, which.
Never happened to me before.
Yeah. The best way, and I don't know if I'd recommend doing this, but the best way that I've found, if you really want to experience that level of output, would be to hop on an air bike and do intervals and do it with the intention of like, you're okay with dying, right? You get on there and you're just like, I'm gonna find a pace that's hard to hit or a calorie number in 20 seconds that's hard to hit and repeat that with like 30 seconds to a minute rest in between and just do it until you feel like you're going to die. It won't take very long. That will elicit some of that similar response. I think what's happening, Kevin, I know you searched it, is when you push yourself that hard aerobically or anaerobically, combination of the two always, I think small blood vessels like the alveoli pop in your lungs or they break a little bit. And
it was either something like, I don't know, it had something to do with that. It was like that or like the blood vessels in your mouth get like so,
yeah,
like expanded because like you have just so much blood throwing through your body that it just kind of permeates into your mouth or something.
Yeah, yep. In high school, my dad was PE teacher. Obviously, we ran the mile each year. And if Todd's your PE teacher and your dad, you're running the mile. Right. You're not You're not jogging the mile. You're running the motherfucker. Okay. So it's sophomore year and we're outside on the track. It's spring. Your boy don't run. Okay. Not in track at this point, but it's mile time. And every lap I'm going around the track, my dad's saying shit like he's a track coach, like, pick it up, let's go faster. I sprint this mother. I give everything that 16-year-old Tyler had. Come across, don't remember what my time was, wasn't impressive. And I am throwing up in the infield in the inside of the track. I just remember these two girls who were walking their mile walk by, look at me like, what in the fuck are you doing, dude? Like, why did you just go all out on the school mile? And I'm just heaving, like actually throwing up lunch. Not good. So that's just the competitive nature. It'll get you in trouble sometime. Well, actually, you know what? So I don't have to do it in post.
I'm sad as fuck, dude, because I really wanted Kevin to get good at jiu-jitsu.
He still could. It's just going to.
Now you could just really dive into leg locks and just drill leg locks over and over.
We'll see. We'll see what the horizon is for getting healthy, but won't be stepping back on the mat until I feel like I have an actual right arm.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's pretty good.
DRF Sportsbook is sending all parlays to the moon. Yes, this is an ad read. Trying to pay the bills around here with these two.
DRF Sports gives me a boner.
Just fully tented, which, by the way, design and process. To the moon, like Elon Musk, baby. Start cashing in with DRF Sportsbook's 22% profit boost for all MLB, NBA, and NHL parlays. The MLB season is here, along with the NBA playoffs and the start of the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. So to celebrate, DRF Sportsbook wants to boost your profits. Head on over to DRF Sportsbook now to start betting and to get fully tented. Tonight on the show, we have no guests. We had two good guests in a row. Someone on Facebook was like, damn, these last two episodes have been great. You got a streak going. And I said, hey, don't worry. We'll ruin that real quick. You can count on us. But we are going to touch on NIL. And not like a Sandusky touch, but like we're going to cross the subject. I want to start with this. I know we have had NIL discussion before. And this could include the portal as well. Because I think they are going hand in hand. And they kind of feed each other in a sense. I would like to know if you two have any updated, changed, more curated thoughts on NIL, the current landscape, things that you've seen, if there needs to be some regulation at this point, if your thoughts from before have changed. We have stated on the podcast before that we're all in favor of NIL, but there's been some pretty crazy shit happening since it went live June 1st or July 1st.
And did we not call it, dude? Did we not say that they were immediately going to end up getting paid by boosters? Like, it's fine. It's cool. Let the kids who make all the money for the crooked ass NCAA get some bread. I'm fine with it, but we called it.
Yeah. I'll say this as a preface. I think for me, and I think that I said this when we had the conversation before, we're not even a year in, right? Things happen fast. There can be 10 NIL articles that you read in one day or one weekend or one week that make it seem like, you know, we've been in this shit for longer than we have been, but there was always going to be an adjustment period. And actually, J-Bo said something in the podcast with him the other day that echoed what I saw online from somebody, don't remember who, that the NCAA had years to do something about this or to bring us closer to a set standard of rules and regulations and how to go about this. They never did anything. They let it get to the breaking point and then said, okay, fuck it then. You guys go ahead and make your NIL money. We're just going to sit back and keep playing pinball in the office. And so now what you get is some crazy stories, some million-dollar deals. I think if you want to read some.
Dude, remember when Kevin said it wouldn't touch a million?
Did he say that?
You don't remember that?
I might have said something like that.
Well, it's touching a million for multiple people out there.
Touching 3 million if you won the Biletnikoff last year.
Who's that?
The kid from, I wanted to say West Virginia, but that may not be right. But there's a kid from a big, some school out in on the East Coast that got offered $3 million to come play at USC.
Wow. That is a lot of money. I've seen stories or people say something like, you know, at some schools, they've already got it set up where the floor for every guy on the team is $100,000 a year.
How?
I don't know. And this is another part that
boosters.
This is another part that we should buy into, or maybe it's the scholarship guys, which is still 85.
Boosters.
All right. So you got 100 guys on the team at 100K each.
$8.5 million. Or 100, it's $10 million if you got 100 guys. 85 scholarship.
Who?
I don't know. Here's the other thing. We don't know if the NIL claims and the stuff that we're hearing is true. Because now that it's like the free world, right? Who knows? People are just going to say shit. Some schools might be inflating their own numbers to make themselves sound good. I don't know. It's the internet, so probably can't take everything for truth. But there are going to be some crazy shit out there. I saw what's wild to me is how they're already giving kids. And I love it. I do love it because in the end, Kev, I'm with you. Fucking capitalism, baby. Make your money for some of these.
Get your chicken.
Well, yeah. I mean, just because you should be allowed the right to make money. I mean, doesn't mean that there isn't some very questionable things going on here ethically.
Any specific ethic issues that you'd like to bring to the forefront of that?
You know what? Maybe it's not an ethical thing, but it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, boosters like going.
I get it.
And like, just like you said, poaching kids from another school for,
yeah,
another, which is, you know, net positive for the kid. You could argue net negative for the sport.
For sure. I think where this really gets dirty, because, and there has been talk of recently the NCAA stepping up and they're going to backtrack some what?
Tampering.
They're going to backtrack and charge back on some tampering and any of the stuff. They're going to crack down on collectives. For those that don't understand what that means, it's essentially a group of people who are no longer at the school as students or staff who are fans, alumni, and who are basically banding together, who have a bunch of money. And they're like, hey, yeah, I'll contribute 500K to a collective each year. And they get 10, 20, 30, 100 people to do that. And they have this collective group of people who then have a collective group of money that is in the 10, 20, $30 million range, maybe more.
Right. How do you just ban people from being friends and pooling their money together to make a donation?
So here's the thing, man. The original intent behind NIL is exactly that. You can profit off your name, image, and likeness. You can do a commercial and get paid for it. You can sign autographs and get paid for it. You have the basic rights of an American adult. Is like you can go make money off your own labor. The unintended thing that has now come from that is people are just giving kids money.
Yeah.
And not exactly. Now, again, is that wrong?
Nope.
No, but that's what it became.
I do think that that's a good.
So now it's become to the point is, okay, who can guarantee, like Kluver's describing in these like collectives, yeah, who can guarantee me the most money because they have these networks and systems that, you know, doesn't matter what I do.
Here's the thing. There's been no parity in college football anyways. And there's been hardly any parity amongst conferences anyways. So I don't really care that the best teams are still going to be the best teams just because they're paying the most money, as long as the guys on our team can also make money.
Yeah. I want to read something quickly. And this talks about collectives. This, again, Ross Dellinger on Twitter is a good follow for this. He's got a lot of NIL articles that he retweets. He keeps up in the space. And he's got some really, he's deep into it. This is from one of his articles. NIL has quickly evolved from its original intent of star athletes sponsoring a local business to crowdfunding models doing out 4- and 5-figure payments for appearances. When the first NIL legislation was passed in a handful of states last summer, there were mega deals mostly reserved for the nation's top athletes and social media stars. Now it has quickly escalated into bidding wars for elite football and men's basketball players. Burnt Ends, a group of fans with a mission of distributing $70,000 each year to Texas tight ends, roughly $10,000 a player, represents how many collectives began. Mom and pop startups pooling money from a legion of online fans who receive exclusive access to players, such as appearances, podcasts, private events, in exchange for donations. At Texas and other...
Dude, Burnt Ends is amazing.
That's pretty good.
First of all, Burnt Ends are unbelievable. Second of all, Texas is known for its barbecue. Facts. And third of all, tight ends. I mean, come on. Let them have their money simply because Burnt Ends deserves it.
Well, in that example, I don't hate it. It's 10 grand, right? It's 10 grand each guy. And it's for, like they said, it's for coming on a podcast, doing appearances, exclusive like access events to players. But they're using that as like a little example of like, oh, this is how a collective gets started. At Texas and other premier college football schools, it's now something more lavish, well-organized, and creative millionaires clubs bankrolling at least a portion of the team. One collective popped up in Texas 3 months after Burnt Ends introduced its concept. UT's Millionaires Club, the Clark Field Collective, began with $10 million in the pot. What? How's the long snapper get in on that sumbitch? Whose dick do I got to suck? Yeah? You know? Right? Let me snap them all. Let me snap.
Are you telling me Sandusky's not dead and he's in Texas somewhere?
Okay. Well, I don't know about that.
Putting together a bunch of millionaires' money.
UT Millionaires Club does kind of sound like Epstein's Island kind of shit, but I'm not going to judge.
Did I say Sandusky or Epstein?
You said Sandusky.
I meant Epstein, but okay. They're both the same type of dude.
Right. They would both be in on a collective for sure. According to sources who have examined player contracts and with knowledge of the recruiting landscape, collectives at elite Power Five programs are developing a baseline of planning to pay each current player or prospect a standard salary. Based on what we are hearing, 50 to 100 grand a year seems to be the average rate.
And this is on top of scholarship checks, too.
Oh, which
why would it damage with that?
Fuck a scholarship check at this point. Who gives a shit?
I mean, what I'm saying is like all your basic costs are covered by that scholarship check.
Right.
This is just all money going in the bank.
This is funny money.
This is fun money. This is spending money.
There's going to be
what you with it, what you want money.
You can go
if you wanted to rent the nicest apartment in town money and still have club money every night money.
Dude, that's parking lot looking like an MLB clubhouse money.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, to put it in perspective, people, our scholarship checks were just shy of 2 grand a month.
At the end, yeah. It was like 15 or 1600 when we were younger.
Right.
Pretty sweet.
Well, I wouldn't know, but yeah.
Sorry, guys. I was on fucking scholarship for 2 years. So, you know.
And that was still enough to have a little walking around money at the end of every month.
If you're smart, absolutely. Right.
Yeah. Like you can still go out on a Saturday night and have plenty of cash in your pocket, have some drinks at the old sports column, you know?
Bet and rent was $650 or something like that.
Not even, man.
Not even. And our check
like $650 with utilities and everything.
And we got food at the complex, right? You're
getting fed at least 2 meals a day.
You still got a little fun money on the Scully check. I felt like I was living big, baby. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Now multiply that by 8.
I could buy me a hot fudge sundae at the Culver's. Oh, hey. 8. Multiply it by 8? How about 20 or 30?
No, 8 a month.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 50 to 100 grand a year seems to be the average rate, says Peter Schontel, CEO of Athliance, an NIL management and compliance software company that works with college athletic programs and collectives. The in-your-face inducements are only really starting to happen now. It's being done in the open. The numbers are startling. Open Doors, which for those listening is a company that is, I believe it's basically a marketplace where you can put up your profile as an athlete and it kind of matches you with companies who are then looking to do an NIL deal. It's actually one of the cleaner companies out there, I believe. They are the largest NIL platform in the space, manages 12 collectives that have already raised nearly 50 million combined. When is this article put out? So this article came out on May 2nd. So this was a little over a week ago. 50 million combined. By year's end, Open Doors expects that number to be over 100 million, or roughly 10 million per collective, a virtual player salary pool of cash tagged as NIL. Open Door CEO Blake Lawrence believes that more than 500 million could be raised in player NIL funds among the 65 Power Five collectives in the next year.
So here's my question is, A, where was this money before? Because
okay. I haven't, you know,
obviously there's some people donating to the program for like buildings and like some people donate towards the head coach's salary and
sure.
stuff, but not, you know, there was not this money.
I think there's some new money, right?
And
I think
two is this thing going to last? Like, are people going to be shelling out this money indefinitely?
That is where I believe this falls apart on the longevity basis, right? And I'll speak on that in a second. Is there anything cool left? A collective in Oklahoma guarantees to pay $50,000 to each Sooner football player and has a familiar face leading the effort, Barry Switzer. Yeah, maybe I'll pull some more numbers from that in a second. Kev, to answer that question, the first part of your question, I think that NIL is exciting and new. And so I think some of this money is new money in the sense of it's pulled people that have money to blow out of the woodwork who maybe haven't donated in the past or haven't gotten involved. And now this is exciting enough for them to be like, oh shit, well, maybe I can help affect our team's performance. We can get some good players around here. I'll pitch in. Right. So I think that's some of it.
Yeah, sure. It's more exciting to offer up money so we can get this good player on our team than so that we can get a new
learning facility.
In the weight
yeah.
room or
something. A new LC, right? To your second, to the second part of your question, I truly believe, and I know there's a shitload of money in the world, I truly believe that it won't last. I don't think it will. One, the funds have to continue to come in, right? Like it has to be, like you start guaranteeing players 100K a piece, you got 100 guys on the team, you got to have at least 10 mil a year. And maybe that's, you know, that's not a lot for some schools. But they also, you would think, as a collective, at some point, they're going to be like, and this is where the adjustment period gets taken into account. We get 2, 3, 4 years down the line here, and it's like, okay, our collective money has been working, right? We should be seeing a little bit of results here. And some people from the outside think, oh, they don't give a shit. They're just throwing money. They don't need to see a return on their investment. I think you're wrong. I think collectives will want a return on their investment. And
yeah, but it's not going to be a hard return investment. It's not like you're throwing that $10 million in the stock market and 2, 3, 4 years later, it's $13 million. It's I put $10 million into this kid and I expect to take my family on a nice vacation at the college football playoff, you know?
But how many teams get to the, you know, there's only so many teams that win the natty, right? There's only so
right.
many.
No, I get what you're saying. And if this is common across every school, okay. Is this even a competitive advantage? Does my money even make a difference at this point? You know, I've thrown money at kids who turned out to be trash. Yep. I don't know if it's sustainable or not. I do know that this is America, and there's a lot of people with a lot of money who love college football. So I don't know, man.
There's some lovely people who are in the Discord, and you've heard us talk about it. If you join the Walk On Army, which there's a lot of people in that army, right? If we need to start a collective inside the Walk On Army, we could probably fish together. You know, we don't have Texas money, right? But we could Walk On Army could throw together a quick little bit, I bet, you know? They have access to a podcast where Drake talks about farting in a guy's face at jujitsu class as well, which is a perk. But they also have the perk of the Discord, which is where we asked this question initially when I said, hey, we're going to talk about NIL and Portal tonight. One of the first questions was, can the NCAA provide guidance at this point and really enforce things? Or is that a lost cause since they've opened the gates?
You know, that's a good question, because kind of like what you said earlier is like they had time to put this in place if they wanted to. No, they just said, go, let all the cats out of the bag.
Yeah.
And it's going to be kind of hard to rein it in at this point, you'd think, right?
I would think so. And with how much shit the NCAA took for not letting, you know, like finally letting people do this. If I were the NCAA, I'd be like, fuck you guys. You guys wanted it. So figure it out, right? Somebody else figure it out. Now, what the NCAA does still have is like the championship runs through them, right? And they can still hand out sanctions to individual schools if they deem something illegal or faulty or whatever, right? So I think they do still have some power. I'm interested to see in them backlogging on the tampering and stuff like that. I don't know. Drake, any thoughts on that?
I like these kids getting the money, dude. I fucking hate the NCAA. So anything that makes the NCAA look like a complete bunch of jackasses that they are, I'm all for.
Okay, Drake, watching the world burn as usual. And it's nothing to surprise them. Courtney asks, obviously there are many differences between basketball and football, but it seems like a decent number of basketball players go to the portal but end up staying at their school, while that doesn't happen with football players. What's the reason behind that, and how does the team feel when someone that enters the portal then decides to stay? That's kind of off topic. We don't have to answer that one.
Because football coaches and players are vindictive as hell.
I don't think we didn't ever have that happen where someone entered the portal and stayed.
But as soon as they would have, we would have been talking the most shit and would have just been like, fuck them forever.
Yeah. I can't imagine it being, that'd be weird, man. That'd be weird. I don't know how that'd go over. Be interesting to find out. Good question.
I don't think it would always be that way. I do think there are some cases. Shudak was in the portal in Keith's year. You know, he stayed, ended up being a success. Everyone loves Shooty, but
and we love Shooty forever.
Yeah. People were talking about Arlen Bruce and Spencer in the Discord having Estella's money. Like they basically give him $1,000 free each month of food, I guess, or something like that.
Oh my God. That's incredible. Fuck.
I tell you right now, man, I would max that out every month.
Well, someone did the math and was asking, and asked if one is a snack and two is a meal, what's three? Drake responded, three is egregious misbehavior.
three is you need to call the plumber.
Exactly, dude. Yeah. That's egregious.
Yeah.
Did you like that response? I felt like that was pretty.
That was a good one.
It was pretty damn good. One of the main questions that's come from the Twitter side of me asking this is, can Iowa now compete? What does this mean for a school like Iowa or Iowa State? Will this affect, because Iowa isn't going to have Texas money. Iowa isn't going to have SEC money. We'll call it that. Right. What do you think this does for Iowa? And I have an opinion on that. Maybe you guys can talk first. Our boy B. Snides even responded first today and said, where will NIL be at this time next year would be my question. Any clarifications you can make for me would be great.
I cannot predict the future, and Snides, you know, I'm dumber than you. So next.
Yeah, I honestly had no idea where it's going. I'm something's like it's just complete Wild West territory right now. Something's going to change. I don't know what, but it's,
I think you guys are probably right about someday the money just isn't going to be the same.
I don't think it will.
Like, it's there now because it's the hot thing.
Yep. Yep.
And there's people who want to have their name out there and be known as like the huge donors, but it may not last. But I don't know, man. There is just such a stupid amount of money amongst college football fans. Like, everybody loves college football to some capacity, and there are some unbelievably rich people out there. So,
yeah,
there may be enough money.
Other thing, if you think about it financially, is you donate to the school, that's a tax write-off. I don't know if you. I'm sure those rich bastards have some way of figuring out the tax implications.
They always do.
Write it off as
they have the government in their pocket
or something like that. That's probably actually what they do.
It would be business expense. Yeah, they'd find a way to make it. Yeah.
Remember, Bill Clinton was on Epstein's jet for 27 flights.
Yeah, because
rich people have the government in their pocket.
And you know what, Kevin? They're the ones. Epstein and Clinton, they fucking invented NIL. That's who they were.
No. I'm just reminding you that rich people have the government in their pocket.
There is some truth to that, probably, I would imagine.
I'm sorry, Clue. What was the first part of that question you asked? Oh, can Iowa compete?
Yeah. Like, what does it do to a school like Iowa? I don't know if we can answer that. I think that's a 5-year question.
All I know is at the end of the day, you still got to lace them up and put on the pads and play the game.
And that's what gives me faith in schools like Iowa. I don't know about Iowa State. And this may change when KF is gone in 2029. Because if he extends past that contract that he just re-signed for, then that guy is coaching until he actually dies on the field, which would be absolutely legendary from the man. Also, somebody said the KF, is now real because of Drake's story of farting in that guy's mouth on the mat. and that's the
guy. Yeah, Matt, so you got to think. I mean, Iowa's been doing better recruiting in as of recently.
Been doing great.
But historically,
average,
slightly above average.
Probably, yeah. The development is where we win.
Which, if you also think about how much money our boosters can probably bring in, probably also slightly above average, I'd say.
I would say right where, maybe middle of the road.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, there's only so many kids out there, right?
And there's only so many
players. Only so many of them can go to the schools that are offering this shit ton of money. So I'd imagine like the amount of talent Iowa brings in stays roughly the same.
And so then you rely on.
So then it comes back to development.
Which I was pretty.
Can you develop your players? Can you find under-recruited players? Here's another question. Are there kids out there that won't be chasing the money? I don't know.
I love that you bring that up because I wanted to mention this. With this NIL stuff, we are automatically jumping to worst case scenario in our head, which is
just a bidding process for each kid.
Right. Which, now we're just assuming that every kid only cares about money now. Like, that's not true. That's just not true.
Yeah. Like, some kids still want to stay in the hometown and play in front of their family and friends, you know.
At the dream school that they grew up watching, right?
Right. So, and some kids know that they're just so goddamn talented, they're going to go to the NFL either way. They want to go play for their dream school.
Arguably, Tristan Wirfs, fucking Linderbaum, like those guys.
Travis Hunter went and played at Jackson State for Deion Sanders.
True.
He's the number one recruit in the whole country.
True. Like, kids
also
are
reportedly getting $1 million in an NIL deal.
Yeah.
Asterisk next to that one.
But there's going to be other factors that influence these kids' decisions. And like you said, Kev, there's only so many good players, right? Like, there's this bell curve of teams who are super elite, have all the good recruits. Eventually, there's not any more 5-stars. Right? The amount of money being given out does not increase the amount of 5- and 4-star players that come out of a recruiting class every single year. It doesn't increase high school talent. So the distribution is probably just going to look the same. Like,
more or less. Yeah. I mean, you might see, I don't know, man. I was going to say you might see some historically underperforming programs that are underperform relative to the amount of money they have in their system. But you know, Texas has always had pretty solid recruiting classes. They've just never, they just really have struggled to turn that into success on the field. And that's why I said at the end of the day, you still have to play the game, right?
You got to step on the field and meet some guy in the fucking B gap that looks like Drake.
Right. So at the end of the day, I think this, it makes it harder on the coaches, especially the head coaches.
Definitely.
To implement a culture that is, you know, like these kids are going to get paid, right? We know that. Good. All right, cool. Kids are getting paid. You have to still bring them back down to earth, which is hard to do for an 18 to 22 year old kid who thinks he's on top of the world before NIL.
Yep.
Right. There's a lot of big egos in the room, even before NIL, right?
Absolutely.
Now bring them back down to earth when they're making six figures plus.
Can you imagine?
That is a hell of a job to install in a locker room, a culture that's still about us, we going to work, doing the daily things, doing the daily disciplines, being brilliant at the basics, and not just being all about swagger money and all that shit.
Doyle's gonna get rehired. Now that's a buzz comment. That's a buzz comment. But somebody, there's gonna be a new position at every school, and there's gonna be a guy that coaches like Coach Doyle filling that position.
The ego buster,
the fucking ego breaker.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's talent plus who can develop, who can instill strongest cultures, and who can still coach football the best. You know, and talent's just one part of that equation.
Yeah. When will you guys officially have an NIL deal with some walk-ons? Well, that is sort of what I've been working on in the background. I am, it's not going to be millions of dollars, but I would like to hand out some cash to a few walk-ons this year, as well as some swag kits, basically, that is full of like good-looking walk-on gear, stuff that's
cool. What we should do is just sponsor like a walk-on party where like we get them bottles at Summit once a year or something like that.
Yes! And no scholarship players are allowed. We stand at the door. We research who has a scholarship, who doesn't. Only the walk-ons get to come in. I was gonna say we order strippers. We get it all. We get bottles. Drake, you in for that?
We get to go too because
let's get walk-ons.
Yeah.
All you'd have is a bunch of white kids standing around. Can you imagine like us three at a party like that?
Oh, that sounds lit, man.
I'll
probably go to Summit at least one more time before I die.
That would not surprise me.
Actually, I don't know. I'm going to set the line right now at one halftime.
Oh, shit.
Are you taking the over or the under, Drake?
I'll take the over.
You're both taking the over. Wow.
Yeah.
Kevin, you're a scumbag, dude. Just because you're a little cleaner cut than you used to be doesn't mean that you're not still a scumbag. You'll get in scummy. There. It's
a little scummy.
Here's where I think the biggest issue happens right now is because the portal rules are the way they are, and this is where the portal comes in. You get an automatic transfer, right? There's no longer a sit-out year. Which matters because guys, like we just talked about, do still care about getting on the field. At some point, the value of you is a football player. Like that is why you're in the position to make this money. So you have to play football and produce at some point if you want this to continue at least. And right now, it looks pretty dirty in the portal when kids are entering the portal and then all of a sudden they announce a transfer a week later. And oh, by the way, they've got a sick NIL deal to go with it.
My question is, can we take one of the less popular sports and just get everyone in the state of Iowa to say, we are going to be the best rowing team in the country and just start pouring NIL money into rowing and start just winning Maddies left and right?
Just dominate.
Let's just choose a sport to be awesome at, okay? And let's just go all in on that one.
I'm in it for
no more funding for any other sports. We are going to choose I don't know. You guys got a better tennis. How about tennis? That's be a great.
See, player. I'm in it for wrestling. I say we just pay our wrestlers like they're Alabama football players. Agreed. So we always get the number one recruited in each weight class and the number two.
I can get behind that. I feel like there's a little more competition in wrestling. Penn State's probably going to pay their guys too. I'm talking like obscure college sports that people don't really follow that much, like tennis,
women, golf. Gymnastics. So we get the sexiest women.
Wow.
We're going to edit that comment out. How about golf? Yeah, let's win some golf national titles.
Drake's talking about recruiting 16-year-old.
Talk about fucking Epstein over here.
Oh, my God. Wow. By the way, I'm trying to get a – that's a horrible comment, too, because I want to have a gymnast on the podcast, and maybe it might just be me and – oh, that was going to sound weird. It might just be me and her, because who knows if you guys even want to be a part of that. But I was going to get one of the seniors who just
oh, yeah, of course we do. We can tell all our stories.
Jesus Christ. You know who's real pissed about this? Is like the teams that got cut who need like $200,000 to be funded, you know? And there's
100%. Yeah.
And there's individuals making that times four per year for the football team. And all the women's swimming and diving team needs is like 100 racks, and they can have an entire program and be athletes, but we can't even get that together.
Yeah. So, I mean, speaking of that, I'll bring up something that Jaybo was talking about, and like, you know, the idea of a possible revenue sharing model where you do that, you know, the money that would be going to athletes was going elsewhere, mainly other programs within athletics that aren't profitable.
Yep.
I would be very sad to see that. You know, if these kids are making that much money in NIL, do we really need to pay them out of the university's pocket at the detriment of other student athletes?
Well, that's socialism, isn't it? Or something like that? Like, you know, like what is that? What is it where
capitalism?
No, it's not. Well, I mean, no, it's everybody makes a certain amount, and then everybody
And nobody's better than anybody else. That would be socialism.
Kevin, help me out. You're supposed to be the fucking guy who knows this.
I don't understand what you're trying to describe right now.
The football players make all the money or are bringing in all the funds, but it's evenly distributed to the tennis team and the whatever team, and everybody makes. Yeah,
that would be socialism.
That's socialism.
Okay, good. I don't sound like an absolute idiot. Thank you. We probably don't want that, you know?
Well, that's what it is right now. I mean, I'm just saying, the football player is getting taken care of now. Do we need to take care of them more and say bye-bye to all the non-profitable programs?
Oh, no. That's a bad idea. I think that's a bad idea.
Right. I mean, yeah.
That
makes $50 million a year in profit. That funds the rest of the athletic department.
Right. I get what you're saying. I don't think that's good, because that then in turn makes NIL or whatever we're calling this as an idea ruin college sports in general, because there's not going to be some college sports versus.
No, I mean,
I have a question. People are saying that this is going to change college football, right? And I want, like, will it though? Like when they.
I'd argue college football has already dramatically changed in the last 5 years with the transfer portal, no more sitting out a year, and now you add this. It's definitely not the same college football 5 years ago, even like definitely not 10 years ago.
I understand what you're saying.
They feel like getting traded in the NFL.
I understand. Where I'm coming from is when you sit your ass in Kinnick Stadium on a Saturday, are you thinking about the NIL deals or are you just enjoying a football game? It looks the same, right? There's going to be guys competing to win.
They're still playing the game of football on the field.
It's still the same game of football. It's going to be awesome to sit down and take your kid to a game or go to your 48th game in Kinnick.
But you can't tell me it's not just a little different. You can't tell me that.
For some people, it might be, but like, I don't think for me it is. I don't know. I don't know. You're still going
to. You can't tell me that, okay, like, it's going to be a little bit different. Say, all right, we got this stud guy for his senior season and we paid him a bunch of money to come here at Iowa. He comes and plays seven games in Kinnick, gets his senior day. You can't tell me that senior day, you know, cheering for that guy is going to be the same as cheering for a guy hometown Iowa Hawkeye, been here 5 years, 4 year starter.
I see what you're saying there. I could also see, like, you know, some, you know, we scrap every penny in Iowa City and Johnson County together, and we pay some big time dude who comes in and is actually like a good quarterback. And all year, every time he throws a touchdown pass, you're like, God damn it. Thank the Lord for NIL. We paid this motherfucker to come save our program. We're a national contender, baby. And that's the only thought you have every time we score a touchdown. I could see it, but I don't know. I don't know if it's that serious. Here's my final question.
I mean, I think it's a part of the thing is, like, you know, before it was strictly amateurs, you know, you're a step away from the big leagues, but technically amateurs.
Right.
And you could see them as kids, right? Hard to see them as kids when they're making this kind of money. Because then it is professional sports, right?
Yes, but no. Because this money cannot be at its root about your performance on the field.
But it is. You know it is.
Or
everyone knows it is.
Or is it though? Like, is Estella's Estella's gonna stop drop their $1,000 to Spencer each month if he throws two picks in the first game? Like, probably not.
Would Estella's be playing is Estella's playing the fourth string quarterback?
No, but is Spencer a good quarterback?
He's the starter. He's the best one on the roster.
He's the probably. Face. He's the face. He is marketable. He is not. It's not because he plays great, but he just plays, because
he in black and gold, he's the best we got. So therefore, he gets the money.
You're right.
If Joey Labiss is 10 times better, he's the starter. He's getting paid. Petras is not.
I'm trying to find an example of where this would make sense. Torrey Taylor, which I guess in Iowa football, like, he actually makes a significant difference, but he's a punter, right? But he's probably in the top five of, like, NIL worthy players on our team because of how popular he is. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not because
he's making a little change.
He's not the star running back or the big time linebacker. Jack Campbell, he might be the best fucking player.
Yeah, just look at the NFL and what guys get paid. Okay, you could your punter could be your best player in your team. They're not even going to be close to making the most. The shittiest quarterbacks make the most money on the team. Doesn't matter. The 32nd quarterback, like the 40th highest paid dude in the league, probably.
What I'm saying is, getting back to the root of your question, what does that look like in execution of thinking of treating these guys like professional athletes? What do you mean when you say, like, it's going to be hard to treat them like I don't know. I guess I don't know where I'm going with that.
You came to this school to play here for this amount of money. Drake, does that sound like a free agency pro athlete?
Kind of sounds like a free agency pro athlete.
So then what are you saying? Like, how are they going to be treated then? Like, what is?
I mean, they don't get treated any different. I'm just saying, it's like, I'm not saying they get treated different. I'm just saying the sport is different.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's not amateur college football anymore.
Sure. But in, yeah, and I'm okay with that. And I think if you go down that road, the old idea of amateurism was gonna fucking die and get buried, regardless of where this went. At some point in the next 5-10 years, that was going to be gone, right?
Yeah, I'm not arguing with you there.
Well, yeah, and what I'm saying is, if someone wanted to argue that and be like, oh, we should have kept football the way it was for as long as we could have, that's a losing argument, because you're on the losing side in the next 5 to 10 years anyway. Last question. Some of the proposed solution to this is, should we cap how much a player can make? Should we not allow it to be touched until they've graduated 4 years later? They can still make them.
Nah. Stop trying to fuck with these kids. Sounds
very illegal to me.
Just because you guys aren't the ones making it doesn't mean they can't.
They still make the money. They still get access to all the money that they make over their 4 years, but they get access to it once they've graduated. Or I'm against both of these, but
No, I don't. I mean, that's not something the school or the NCAA could enforce. I think that's illegal. I mean, it's like,
if they're old enough to vote, they're old enough to join the military, they're old enough to take care of their own money. Like, don't, no.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of people that do dumb things with their money, no doubt, but it's their money to do dumb things with.
Can you imagine some of the teammates we had if they're making 50, 100K a year and what they would
have? Some might actually pay their water bill.
Oh, shit. You know what? Hey, Kev, you know what? They wouldn't.
Yeah, they would. Come on.
No. I fucking guarantee, chef's kiss, that some of our teammates given 50 grand would still be empty at the end of the month. A couple of our teammates would find a way to be fucking broke at the end of the month.
Oh, man, that's tough. No way.
Bro?
No. No way.
Guaranteed.
Dude, no. Uber's right. I'm going to dinner.
Wow. We'll finish with that, Kevin. Drake said I was right. Because here's what would happen, Kev. They'd let 4 months build up. They'd buy a $200,000 car, and then they'd be broke. And then they'd buy...
No, I don't see it happening.
Okay. All right. Well, we got a lot more questions or comments on this that we didn't touch. And maybe we'll do some more on this. I know Ben Neiman reached out to me and was talking. We were having a conversation about NIL and like some of the shit that was going down. So we might be able to get him on and, you know, just catch up with Ben in general about playing for Kansas City, but then also talk a little NIL and stuff like that. So thank you guys for participating. If you want to participate in conversations like that or see some exclusive stuff or be in on exclusive conversations and other cool perks, go to the Wash Up Walk-Ons Patreon, patreon.com/washupwalkons, and join at any of those tiers. And then just keep listening to the show because we love you guys. Thanks, DRF, for sponsoring the show so that we can talk about dumb shit like this. And that's about it. 316 episodes deep. Y'all continue to come back. We love you. Talk to you next time. Peace.